Tíf galera tha falcher oath, could you anor Gaelic and shall chin negashach ni? Good Monday evening and welcome to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. This is Austin Camerton coming to you from downtown Ottawa, live in the market, and you're listening to Ottawa's only Irish radio show. Tonight we have two interesting guests. I had the honour of meeting with Premier Dalton McGuinty a short while ago, and we recorded an interview, and also I'm going to repeat an interview I aired just before Christmas, and it's with Glenn Hansard. And if any of you were watching the Oscars, Glenn Hansard took the best song, and I'll play that for you later on as well. But I want to keep you up to date with all the things that are going on in the city. As usual, there's a lot happening, and around this time of the year, there's even more than usual. And regulars, Monday evening, 6:30, cultists have Irish dance and language classes, and that's over at Blessed Sacrament in the basement of 194 4th Avenue. And every Tuesday, so tomorrow if you get a bit of time, head over to the Irish-sponsored Seniors Drop-In, and that's at St. Margaret Mary's at Sunnyside in Fairburn. And that runs between 11 and 2. And then on Wednesday at 6:30, cultists also have some set dance classes, and that's over at Villa Marconi at 1026 Baseline Road. And of course, every Wednesday to Saturday, there's live music down at the Irish Village in the market, and also at the Heart and Crown on Preston Street. But some of the other things going on tomorrow evening, if you feel like some Welsh music, there is a free concert, and that's at the University of Ottawa, the Samard Hall, room 129, and it's an evening of Welsh music, and that commences at 7:30. And on Friday, we get underway with Irish Week, getting right into the thick of things. There's an Éireann Luncheon, and that's always an event that's well worth going to. Lots of entertainment with silent auction, and that's out at St. Patrick's Home, and the tickets there are $35. You need to get out there around, I'd say probably around 11 o'clock, and Bill Bill Tobin is the contact for that, and Bill's number is 613-224-7113, that's 613-224-7113, and that's a number for a variety of things that are going on. And then on the 8th, there's an Irish kitchen party, and that's join old and new friends alike for an Irish buffet dinner and non-stop entertainment at St. Patrick's Home. And K.O. Hegarty is the contact there. You can also leave a message at 224-7113 for that also. And I'll tell you more as the show goes on. But earlier on in the month, I had the opportunity to sit down with Premier Dalton McGuinty. And one of the rules was there were no politics. So I got him to share a little about his family background. As we approach St. Patrick's Day, we're now in the month of March here on the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton. And tonight we are up close and personal with Premier Dalton McGuinty. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
I'm delighted to be with you.
And as I say, we're going up close and personal because politics is not allowed. There is no politics allowed to be discussed. So what I'd like to talk about is Dalton McGuinty, the person, from early on in the family, growing up, the influences that your parents gave you, the relationships you had with your family, stuff like that.
Sure.
So, from a background, you're an Ottawa.
I'm an Ottawa native. My mother was from Northern Ontario, my dad from the Ottawa Valley. And we had a very busy family. There were 10 children at home and a couple of dogs. And so there was no shortage of excitement or activity. And one of the things that I learned to do early on was to take responsibility. My dad was a university professor. He taught romantic poetry. After 10 kids, my mom said, that'll be enough romance. Thank you very much. A little more poetry, a little less romance. But my dad had to teach night school and summer school. Mm-hmm. And my mom was a nurse, and she worked evenings or the night shifts. So my job as one of the oldest I was the oldest boy, was to make sure the dishes got done and the homework got done and the garbage got put out and the dogs were walked and the laneway was shoveled and the house was vacuumed and all those kinds of things. So from an early age, you might say, I had to kind of take charge. I used to kid my mom and say, you know, I had no childhood. I was the only kid I know who changed his own diapers because she was so busy focused on the little ones. But
on that point, would you say then that because you had a large family, you were able to develop friendships within the family, where a lot of others who would have had smaller families and maybe in an urban environment integrated and made their friends outside the family?
I think it's certainly fair. I notice that more in the older ones, that we tend to focus more on the family. Maybe it's because our responsibilities and our chores kept us at home. We didn't have any problem making friends outside the household, but we probably had a fewer number in comparison to the younger ones who seem to be more outer-directed. But one of the things that it did do is it quickly teaches you how to deal with different personalities. And one of the things that it taught me, which I found to be very important in my responsibilities as premier, is I learned a few things. First of all, nobody ever picked a fight with a McGinty in the schoolyard. Because if you dealt with one, you had to deal with all of them. And we came to understand that if we pulled in separate directions, we accomplished nothing. But if we pulled together, we never felt like 10 kids, we felt like 20. So today, in a highly competitive global economy, we're only 13 million in Ontario. If we're going to be at our best, we need to pull together.
From that perspective, being one of the older members and with the responsibilities then, did you get out to play sport much, or were you confined to barracks with chores?
No, we played a bit of sports. We had one family sport. That was skiing. And the rule was, if you want to participate in another sport, you're on your own. My mother would say, I'm not driving you all over Hell's Half Acres in order to get you to your sport. So we would ski together, which is a bit of an undertaking, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. getting all those people and all that equipment back and forth to the ski hill. But we also had an opportunity to get into a number of other sports because my dad was actually a very entrepreneurial guy. As I grew up, in terms of odd jobs, I snowplowed driveways. I sold manure. My wife Terry says I'm in the same line of work today.
I wasn't going to comment.
And we aren't going to comment on that. We sold fresh fruits and vegetables dock to dock from a boat on a lake in the summer. Working with my dad, we bought old fixer-uppers, fixed them up, and then sold them. Sold firewood. We did a number of things. And one day he came home and he said, I bought some property on the Quebec side. We're going to run a summer camp. He turns to me and he says, you are going to teach water skiing. I said, I don't know how to water ski. He said, take a lesson. He turned to my brother Dylan. He said, Dylan, you're going to teach sailing. He said, Dad, I don't know. My dad said, take a lesson. David was horseback riding. Patrick was responsible for the waterfront. Somebody else was responsible for archery. Somebody else for arts and crafts. And that way, for I think about 8 straight summers, the 10 children were kept busy. We didn't make a lot of money, but we had great summers, and we had responsibility for about 50 young children who would come in. My mother was the camp nurse, and my father prided himself on being the caretaker of the grounds. And so it was a lot of fun, great opportunities to learn about sports and about leadership. And we always reserved spaces in our camp for kids from the Children's Aid Society. My parents were very, very intent on helping us to understand that we were very, very lucky, and that there were others out there who were less fortunate. And as my dad used to say, with privilege comes responsibility. So that was one important other lesson that we learned along the way.
Was music a part of life at that time?
Music was a big part of our life. We had, not only did we listen to a lot of music, but I took guitar lessons. Most of my siblings took piano lessons. I never kept up music as much as I would have liked, but I'm really proud of the fact that I've got a family of 4 kids myself now, between 22 and 26, 2 of the boys. Until just recently were in a band, produced a couple of their own CDs, and one plays drums and the other plays electric guitar. The good news was that I always knew where they were when they practiced. The bad news is that they were in my house, but it was a lot of fun.
I'm going to saddle up in the old gray mare, and able to write through the night without a worry or a care. I'm a messenger boy, bringing my love to you. I'm a messenger boy, bringing my love to you. I see a light in her bedroom. I pray to God that I didn't come too soon. I'm a messenger boy, bringing me love to you. I'm a messenger boy, bringing my love. And a man shouts, who goes there? A breeze through the cold and the wind and the rain and the frost and the snow, and I'm in love and I do not feel the pain. I'm a messenger boy, bringing my love to you. I'm a messenger boy, bringing my love to you.
You coming down or what? Riding half the night together, I'm freezing with cold. Ah, come on down for a few minutes anyway. I swear I won't. Ah, come on. Just for a minute, what? Huh? Get over that. He won't hear you, can you?
As you progressed on and got through high school, at what point did you feel some kind of an urge to get involved in organized groups, be it student unions or anything like that?
Right. Well, again, it comes back to one of the things that my parents impressed upon us. You got to think of this now. Okay, we were 12 for dinner. Five on the bench on this side, five on the bench on this side, my father at this end, and my sainted mother, when she had time to sit, at that end. And my dad would look us all in the eye and say, remember, kids, it's never going to be good enough just to grow up, get a job, and pay taxes. Everybody does that. You need to find a way to make some kind of a contribution to this quality of life that's been handed down to you on a silver platter. You need to try to find a way to make it better for others coming behind us. So that was kind of part and parcel of our teachings at home. The other was that my dad, while his profession was that of a university professor, his passion was politics. And from the earliest days that I could remember, he'd throw me and my brothers and sisters into a car, we'd go to a campaign headquarters, we'd make telephone calls, we'd stuff envelopes, we'd knock on doors, we'd put up signs, and came to recognize that as kind of a contribution to democracy. In 1987, my father was elected for the first time as a member of provincial parliament at the age of 60. He very much enjoyed that experience. He'd always wanted to do it earlier, but he'd always say, I have 10 reasons why I can't, and they're all under the age of 16. In 1990, at the age of 63, on the 16th of March, my father died shoveling snow off the back deck. So it became, the question in my family was not whether one of us was going to run, it's which of us was going to run. I made the argument that being the firstborn male and having the same name as my father and having a garage full of signs with that name on it, economics would dictate that I should be the guy who should run. So I did run, but I ran because my family circumstances better permitted it, although my wife Terry, in fairness to her, would have argued that having four kids at the time between the ages of 4 and 8 was not a good time to move to Toronto, for me to move to Toronto on my own.
If I can bring you back, at the time when you were all together as kids growing up as well, was religion a serious part of life in the McGinty household?
That was a huge part of our life. One of my earliest memories I can remember growing up with spending weekends. My only source of unconditional love came from my grandmother. I'm kidding about that, but she had dozens of grandchildren. Dozens. And the remarkable thing was that she treated us all the same. She hated every one of us. I'm just kidding. She actually had a soft spot for the firstborn male of her baby boy, Dalton Sr. So she had dozens of grandchildren, but she spoiled me. And I love that because I got all kinds of special attention when I go over and spend the weekends at my grandmother's. She was a devout Irish Catholic. Her name was Honora Foley. She married a McGinty, and he never knew what hit him. She was married at the age of 16. He was 32. And as they say, he never knew what hit him. She ran the whole show from the day they met until the day he was gone. My dad used to say that when my father, my grandfather, passed away, the priest later asked someone who was there, did he have any last words? And this fellow said, no, he didn't, because his wife was with him till the end. My grandmother was very devout, and she'd go to chapel every morning. And when I was there, I would go with her. My dad was very devout Catholic, and he would. So Lent was very important in our household. The sacraments were all very important. Not having meat on Fridays was very important. Reading from the Bible was very important to us. So that was my upbringing. That remains very important to me.
So from a very high level, given how society has changed, and not just here but in the Western world, would you see that society has benefited or has deteriorated with religion being in a way taking less of a prominence in people's lives?
I think, you know, let me answer that this way. Through the eyes of my children, they didn't live through the Middle Ages, when some horrific things were done in the names of churches. But they have lived through the late 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century, where some acts of terrorism have been committed in the names of devotion to a faith. So they are, I would think that they've developed a concern or misgivings or an apprehension now about some of the bad things associated with, I guess you might call it, blind adherence to faith. I am, having said that, I'm convinced that the younger generation will, I think that they will move closer to a faith over time. So I think that one of the things that, I've just taken a decision now. And I know we said we're going to talk about politics.
No, we're not going to talk about politics.
But
it'll be dangerous.
I think this touches on this, because my mother just gave me hell on this score. She says, why are you taking the Lord's Prayer out of Queen's Park? And I said, Mom, what I'm doing is, I'm not saying that you can't go to church. I'm not saying that you can't recite prayers at home or wherever you want. But I am saying that Ontario was changed. And one third of the people living here were born outside the country. In our capital city, there are about 4.5 million people there. 52% of the people living there were born outside the country. So we've embarked upon this wonderful adventure, which is largely without precedent in the annals of human history. By and large, societies have been founded on sameness. People have come together and said, you know what, we're all going to look the same, talk the same, have the same faith, the same traditions, and the same cultures. And that way we'll know us from everybody else. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do something different here in Canada. And the original deal was the French Catholics and the English Protestants, and the Irish were mixed in there as well, and the Scottish as well. We were going to come together, and we were each going to keep what was important to us, what was of value to us, and we were going to try to do something which nobody else had done, which is to find strength in our diversity. So back to this whole issue of the Lord's Prayer. What I've asked the Parliament to do, each of the parties to send a representative forward, and to give me their best advice. What should we be doing today to better reflect the people that we represent inside the legislature?
Moving along, I know you were in Ireland for your 25th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. Do you want to share a little on the experience you had over there and how you enjoyed that?
I was in Ireland as well in 19... I think 97 or 98, after I'd become leader of the party, and visiting Dublin. And I couldn't get over the difference between 1997 and when I was there just 2 years ago with Terry, in terms of the growth. And Dublin is as cosmopolitan a city today as any other large European or North American center. Very diverse. It's really funny to see the Chinese Irish and the Indo-Irish and the African Irish all speaking with an Irish lilt. So it's becoming it's a very exciting, and it must be presenting some challenges at the same time too, to deal with growth and diversity, infrastructure challenges. Terry had never been to Ireland before, and I'd never been to Cork before, so we went to Cork. In fact, we rented a lighthouse in Cove Harbour. It was a wonderful experience for us. We had fortunately there was only one night of heavy fog. I had to put two and two together. Well, it turns out when there's a fog, the damn horn went off about every 45 seconds. So I had only one sleepless night. I learned from that experience. But we found it was very restful. The people were very friendly. And the roads here in Ontario, if you want excitement, if you want to get the blood flowing, you go to... the exhibition place I'm thinking of there, where all the games are in, outside of Toronto, the rides.
Wonderland.
You go to Canada's Wonderland.
Yeah.
There you just go for a drive.
Correct.
You've got the roads seem to be about 12 feet wide, and a lot of them are there's no curve, there's no side of the road to speak of. There's just a stone wall, mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of give. But it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience. What I'd like to do, and we traveled around quite a bit by small car on the roads to see the various vistas overlooking the ocean. And one of the things that I really enjoyed as well is just walking through the fields. And I remember asking some of the locals, they said, "You sure it's okay for me to walk through this field?" Oh, you just walk for as far as you want. Here, you know, you could be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But there seemed to be much greater openness to that. But I'd like to go, and I haven't been there before, to Donegal. Mm-hmm. That's where my family is originally from. We emigrated during the time of the famine to the Ottawa Valley. And I have never discovered why, but all the McGinties, apart from my family, spelled their name McGinty, and all in Donegal, spelled it the same way. Somebody somewhere along the way, I don't know whether, maybe when they arrived here, somebody spelled it for us, inserted the U.
Mm.
So it's enabled me to keep track of my family. But it's hard for me to connect it back to Donegal because there's no U there. But I'm told by all my family, that's where we're from originally.
Well, the good news for that is I don't know at what date, but you do know that there was an initiative between the National Archives in Ireland and Library and Archives Canada, which digitized all the census information from 1901 and 1911. So you can actually search the database on a variety of levels and zone down right to the size of a dwelling, the number of bedrooms, the type of roof.
Really?
Now, Donegal isn't up there yet.
Yeah.
It's just Dublin at the moment.
Right.
But they're going up county by county, so you have to crash the site. But Donegal will be going up, and you might be surprised at when you get in.
Well, that would be very helpful.
Yeah. In relation to the Irish economy and Irish politics, did you see anything or hear anything or talk to people that caused it to stop and say, that's different, maybe I can learn from this?
You bet I did. When I went there originally, and I went there to learn more about the Celtic Tiger and the Irish Miracle and all that, there was something that really impressed me, and it was this. Whether I spoke with the Minister of Education with whom I met, business leaders with whom I met, union leaders with whom I met, whether it was a guy who drove the taxi cab or the woman who served me a pint of beer in the pub at night, and if I asked them, what are you doing here in Ireland to make yourself stronger? What are you doing to be better at something than anybody else in the world? And what is your part in that? They all knew the answer. You know, Ireland's a pretty small place. There are actually very few people there. They've got this gorgeous diaspora that spread itself throughout the world. I remember stories told by my grandmother about the only thing you ever wanted to do growing up in Ireland was get out, because there was no opportunities. There was a time when you had to pay tuition for high school.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody was able to harness the power of shared purpose in the 20th century, it was surely Ireland. And labor came together, and business came together, and the government came together, and they decided, you know what, no more of this. We're going to have to set aside some of our differences here and the greater public interest so that we can move forward. I thought it was a really powerful lesson. And in a country as geographically challenged as Canada, where we sometimes spend so much time focusing on our regional differences, we've got to find a way to overcome that. Only 32 million.
Mm-hmm.
They're 1.3 billion in China. They're 1.1 billion in India.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can draw some good lessons from the Irish experience and how they were able to turn themselves around by coming together. And that harkens back to something I said at the beginning about growing up in a big family. If we pulled together, we felt like 20, never 10.
In order to wrap up, because your time is precious, how are you going to spend the 17th of March?
17th of March.
Or that weekend.
Yeah. I haven't planned that far yet. Often I'm invited to speak at different functions. The Ireland Fund, which I've attended here in Ottawa or in Ireland in the past, is something which I've really enjoyed. So often my brothers and I will get together and do something. Somebody somewhere will find some Guinness, I'm sure, and we'll just have a good time.
Premier McGuinty, thank you very much indeed for taking time to come out to the Gaelic Hour.
My pleasure. Best to you.
And that was Premier Dalton McGuinty. You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. And I played a Christy Moore piece of music in the middle there, because when I finished up chatting with the Premier, he mentioned that his daughter, who had spent some time in Ireland, introduced him to Christy Moore and Christy Moore's music, and that he really enjoyed it. We'll be back with you after these messages.
The little Irish village in the heart of the Byward Market had its humble beginnings in 1992 with the now famous Hart and Crown, a second venue, the Snug Pub, since 1997. And then there's Mother McGuinty's and Roisin Dubh, the Black Rose, since 2001. They complete the Irish village, each a treasure in its own way. Visit the Irish village. We can accommodate groups of all sizes, private seating areas, spacious patios, and party rooms. Tell us about your special event and we will take care of the rest. 613-562-0674.
The Chin Songwriting Competition is back. We're looking for talented local musicians to submit their original compositions. You must register to enter. Get to the phone and call Chin Radio now at 613-244-0979, extension 414. For a complete list of contest rules, click on to chinradio.com and follow the World Music Showcase link. Chin Radio and Carleton University, giving promising musicians the opportunity to vie for cash prizes totaling $5,000. Register now. Call 613-244-0979, extension 414.
One man set himself the task 10 years ago of recording some of the old ways of farming that have virtually disappeared in his own lifetime. Michael Lyons from the parish of Taghmaconnell in South Roscommon.
This is the parish of Taghmaconnell in South Roscommon. I was born here. In the late 40s, my father was farming and out working for hire with horses, cutting hay and corn. At that time, most of the work on the farm was done by horses, except for the thrashing, which was done by either steam or tractor. In the early 50s, the tractor became more popular and the horse started to disappear off the land. My father taught me the old ways of farming, and this video shows some of these old ways, as well as the transition from horse to tractor and other aspects of life in rural Ireland at that time.
To purchase your copy of the Old Ireland DVD, visit www.thegaelichour.ca and follow the links.
Trattoria Cafe Italia welcomes you for lunch or dinner 7 days a week with the most delicious Italian regional recipes you can imagine. Pasquale Domenico reminds you of their event room, Sopra, for your family celebrations or your business functions. Trattoria Cafe Italia, 250 Preston Street, is the place to remember to make your social gatherings a memorable occasion. Reserve today by calling Trattoria Cafe Italia at 613-236-1081.
I want to bring you up to date on some of the things that are coming up in the coming week. On Saturday, the Six Nations rugby gets back underway and Ireland are playing Wales. And that game is at 8.15, 8.15 a.m. Ottawa time. And you can catch that down at the Hart and Crown and get your breakfast down there as well. It's a wonderful place to go. I enjoy the rugby. And then at 10.15, Scotland are playing England. And that goes on also. And then at 6 p.m. on Saturday, there's the Irish Kitchen Party, and that's out at St. Patrick's Home, 2865 Riverside Drive. And if you want to get tickets for that, they're $25 per person. Give Kay a call at 829-8467 or Bridget at 613-834-0387. And then on Sunday the 9th, there's another rugby game, and that is France versus Italy. And the Irish Canadian Culture Centre, there's a pancake breakfast, and that goes on at 10 a.m. Of course, on Friday the 7th, Paddy Keenan is in concert, and that's over at the First Unitarian Church congregation, and that is at 30 Cleary Avenue. Doors open there at 7:15 p.m. and the music starts at 8. And tickets for that are $18 in advance or $25 at the door. And this is Paddy Keenan.
In his own camp, and his money was his health, all thrown to the dust by his very own hands. But his beauty lingered still beyond the draining of the sands. Greener was the other side of the hill, richer the other man's land. But we loved him just like brothers would. We loved him like no others could. And she loved him just like a lover should. Take good care of an aching heart, you never can replace it. You know you're the master of your art, you'll see that when you think it fit. Those orbs of blue all jaded away, no laughter from them dances. Still you're bound to remember this one day. Hazards are risks and the risks are chances. You can run for cover, run for cover like a frightened hare, till it's all over now, all over, and there's no one there. 'Cause you daren't discover that we really care. Run for cover like a frightened hare, till it's all over now, all over, there's no one there. 'Cause you daren't discover that we really care. He was a stranger to himself, a spy in his own camp, and his money was his help.
That, of course, was Paddy Keenan and Tommy O'Sullivan, and they will be out at the First Unitarian Congregation in Ottawa on 30 Cleary Avenue. And if you want to get tickets for that, they're available at a variety of locations. You go onto my website and you'll find a link there. You may have noticed at the Oscars that Glenn Hansard got the award for Best Song, and I was very fortunate to be able to interview Glenn Hansard towards the end of last year, and we talked about the movie Once and his musical composition, and I want to share that interview with you again tonight. This is Austin Camerton on the Gaelic Hour and Chin 97.9, and as I say, I put it to Glenn Hansard, that's I certainly enjoyed the movie, and anyone that's out there, I would urge you, if you get a chance, to go to the movie once and enjoy. He was a busker in Dublin in the movie and composed the music with Marketa Irglova. And this is Glenn Hansard. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
And as I said there, you know, you've had a movie career going back to... The Commitments would have been your first movie, was it?
It was, yeah. It was. Well, actually, I was busking on the street at the time, which was just kind of ironic I was busking on the street and they came up to me and they asked me, you know, a casting agent said, you look like someone we might want to audition, you know, you've got red hair, we're looking for a red-haired guitar player from the north side of Dublin. and I sort of fit the bill, and so I went and I did an audition, and I remember meeting Alan Parker, and, you know, it was very exciting to sort of be offered to act in a film. I thought it was very exciting, and just sort of rolled along with it.
Right.
And I got the part, and I really enjoyed it. And ironically, my character in the movie, in The Commitments, my character at the end of the film, when you see like what they're all doing now, my character was busking on Grafton Street. And I remember Parker thinking that was funny, because that's actually what I really did.
That's
kind of ironic. That's ironic that my character starts with, you know, it's like 15 years later, the once character starts on Grafton Street.
That's right. It is ironic in every respect, because the whole story of once then revolves around a busker. Once, where did once come from?
Well, once is the result of an idea John Carney had. Now, John Carney is an old friend of mine. He used to play bass in The Frames,
right,
in my band for a couple of years in the beginning. And we've talked for a long time about the possibilities of doing something together. I mean, basically, John left The Frames to go make films. That was, you know, that was something he really needed to do. And I remember during my Commitments experience, I went and I bought him an 8mm camera and a clapperboard. I remember, because we were in this sort of environment where you could get those things. And I bought him, and I said, right, now leave my band and go make your films. And he sort of went off, and he made films for years. And recently, like about maybe 2 years ago, he came to me and he said, look, I've got this idea. You know, I've got a 16-page outline of a story about a busker whose girlfriend's gone to live in England, and he meets this new girl, and she's an immigrant, and I'm very much going for a sort of a modern multicultural Dublin, because nobody's really addressed it. And basically, these are two people who the Celtic Tiger has kind of missed, if you like. And I loved the idea of the story. I loved it, particularly I loved the political aspect of it, which was very subtle. But, you know, he basically wanted me to write him the songs and basically give him some anecdotal, because I was a busker for years, to give him some anecdotal stories, which I did, and he added them into the film. But at this time, Cillian Murphy was going to be playing the main role. And I wasn't involved. I was only involved as a songwriter and guest consultant. And so we rolled along with it, and John's idea fleshed out a bit. I told him some stories, you know, for instance, the guy getting his money stolen. There was a guy who used to steal my money on a very regular basis, and I'd see him coming, and I knew, you know, I just knew certain days he looked really strung out, and he really needed to, you know, to take. The thing is, if you're so down that you need to rob from a busker, then you're in a desperate place.
That's right.
And this guy would come and steal my money every so often. So anyway, I did, just to make a long story short, Cillian Murphy ended up pulling out right before we started shooting the film, and John was spent a couple of days basically not knowing what to do, whether he was going to collapse the project or whatever. And so he came and he said at the last minute, he said, you know what, we don't need money to do this. We can do this in a very, very different way. So we ended up shooting once in 17 days, and we did it for €120,000.
Fantastic.
And that's kind of how it all came about.
And of course, the response, it opened in Ireland, was it in March?
In March, yeah.
And what was the response?
Well, I have to say that the response was quite typical of an Irish audience when it comes to Irish film. They didn't really go see it.
Right.
You know, it did okay. And it was mainly people that liked my band who went to see it. And again, it didn't get a big release. I mean, there wasn't much press behind it. They didn't spend any money on advertising. So the film came out, and I think it had a very very modest run in the cinema, which was kind of, you know, which didn't surprise us in any way. What really surprised us is what happened later.
Yeah, well, of course, once it hit North America.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I know. It was somebody that we both know was telling me about it when I was down in New Orleans. And I came back to Ottawa for the and I caught it back in June. And I ended up back down in New Orleans the next week and was able to share stories and trade stories with Anne Brio. Sherry's mom.
Sherry's mother, yeah.
Yeah, I know Anne quite well. And I must say, when I got here and I saw the movie, I was thrilled with it. It's fantastic. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. And the response here, there was a tremendous response in Ottawa from the point of view of attendance at the cinema.
So, it's incredible. It's just been amazing.
So the tour now that you guys are on, and I know it's pretty hectic that you've been traversing the U.S. and working your way down. You're down the south at the moment. What has the response been like on the tour?
It's been incredible. It's been very unusual in that. I guess in a way, it's kind of for the audience. It's a little bit different than a normal gig in that they went to see this movie. You know, this couple in the end kind of go their separate ways, which we felt was very important in the film, that the two characters go their separate ways and they never really get together. And yet people are coming to see the gig and here's the two characters actually together and playing music and almost living. It's almost like living out the sequel or something. It's very unusual. People have been very really responsive to us, and it's almost like they're coming to see. It's weird. It's almost like not like a rock gig. It's more like people are coming to see two actors.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of unusual, but it's been really great. You know, we've been really, really enjoying it, and it's a lot of older audience as well than my band, which I'm really enjoying, because I always feel that an older audience will they'll make up their mind slowly and they'll decide, and once they decide they'll stay with you, and that's been really great. I mean, I've really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Well, of course, the music in Once is very, very embracing, and as a composer for that, like, it's so engaging, and we're going when we finish up here, we'll be playing some of the music. I have played some of the tunes over the last few weeks, and it really is beautiful music. For the compositions, did you work alone or did you have collaborate on any of those?
I collaborated on a few of them with with Marquetta, the actress, the main actress in the film.
And she has a beautiful voice.
What's that?
She has a beautiful voice.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful player. She's a great songwriter and a great person to just collaborate with. You know, very, very easy company, you know, has great ideas. And we just, you know, I worked on a lot of them on my own. And then a few of them, myself and Mara sat down with and we wrote. And then she wrote a few herself.
Right.
So basically it was just the two of us pretty much all the way, I guess.
How, and I take it Marquetta is an immigrant to Ireland, how has she found the experience?
Well, it was interesting because when she first was coming, she first came to visit Dublin, one of the things that really sort of shocked her was how long it took her to get through passport control every time she, you know, because, you know, she's not coming over here to work, she was just coming over to visit. Over to Ireland to visit, and she said she just had to spend so long, and they would give her like a piece of paper saying you can stay in the country for, you know, 12 days. And for me, it was quite shocking. I was like, man, this is Ireland. I mean, this is not, because, you know, we all kind of grumble about, you know, we grumble about the about having to, you know, going to the American embassy every year to get our visas, and it's almost like sometimes you sort of feel like, oh my God, I mean, why are you making it so difficult for people to get into your country? I mean, it's just so, it almost makes you not want to go. You know, it's almost like just kind of, you know, prove to me that you're not going to stay. You know, it's like, and yeah, sometimes you almost feel like, well, you know, I don't really want to go that much.
You know,
and so it was kind of, it was difficult for her. And when she came over, you know, even for instance, when she was selling the flowers on Grafton Street, she was just acting. But the flower ladies on Grafton, the actual flower ladies on Grafton Street, were quite aggressive towards her.
Right.
And they were like, you know, they were saying stuff like, you know, we don't want any bodies over here.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, Bosnies meaning Bosnians, which were which were one of the first groups of immigrants into Ireland.
I should tell you, Glenn, that the station that we're going out on, the Gaelic Hour, it's a multicultural radio station.
Yeah.
And all different, we have something like 26 different cultures that broadcast through here. And the great thing about Canada is that, you know, it's very much embraces and has evolved into an immigrant country where we all work very much together.
That's great.
Like the program that comes after me is a Haitian program, and there's a we have Bosnian here, and we have German, everything. But it's a fantastic, and I know that the changing face in Ireland, when I was home recently, it becomes very apparent that immigration is having a major effect on Ireland.
Yes, sure is.
Particularly like when we were travelling and we were around some of the hotels, it was in the service industry particularly, there seems to be quite a lot of immigrants.
Yeah, it's a lot of Polish people now living in Ireland. My brother runs a construction company, and it's pretty much all of his employees are Polish.
So,
but, you know, he's kind of enjoying, you know, but it's very, very interesting what's happening in Ireland. I mean, we've even got a Polish newspaper now in Ireland. And when I was growing up, Ireland was just a white Catholic country.
That's right.
You know, I remember there was a black kid came to our school when we were kids, and it was really unusual. I remember going up and touching his hair and it being really unusual.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And now it just seems like there's been so much change.
So how
so fast. And, you know, it's funny because it's always the working class that have to deal with it. You know, in any country, it's always the working class that always deal with immigration first.
Right.
Because, you know, the middle classes can sit around and write in their newspapers and go on about it from a distance and talk about the economic end of things. But actually, it's the working class that always end up having to share their community, if you like.
So,
it seemed to me like even when we were making them once, you know, it was something. I was really, really happy with the subtlety of the political statement we were making,
yeah.
Which was just that, you know, nobody had addressed the fact that Ireland's becoming more multicultural in film, and since once there's been a few who have done it now, and I think it's really, really important because you can't ignore these things.
So how is that having an impact on the entertainment industry? Like, so when you go out and you're doing a gig, or you do something like you've done in the form of once, is the entertainment industry taking into account that there's a large audience out there now that is not Irish?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I haven't noticed it, to be honest with you. I mean, at Frames gigs, like still when we play in Dublin, it's still mostly Irish people who come to see us. And, you know, what we started to do about a year and a half ago was when we were advertising our gigs, you know, we'd put it in Polish also, or put it in Chinese, or just only, not only because we wanted to basically open up the sort of doors to other cultures, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see it. And some bands are doing it now, where when they advertise for a gig, they'll put it in a few different languages, you know, not just English,
right.
Which I think is very it's a very open approach, and very realistic and very fair, because, you know, you've got a lot of people living in Ireland who don't speak English.
That's
like
right.
An awful lot.
Yeah. So while you guys, I know you're on your way to Atlanta. You're working your way up here towards Canada, and I understand you will be in Montreal. Is it on the 22nd?
That's right, yeah.
And then you're down Toronto, I think, on the 23rd.
Yeah.
So that's kind of your only touchdown in Canada.
We missed out on Vancouver this time.
Right.
We were going to go to Vancouver, and yeah, but the next time we come over, hopefully we can do, because there was one tour we did maybe 2 years ago where we did like Edmonton and we did Quebec City, and it was lovely. We went right across the country, had a great time.
And how did the Canadian audiences respond to you?
I really like, especially Montreal. I really like the audience that comes to see our shows. I don't know what it's going to be like for myself and Marquetta, because obviously it'll be a slightly different audience. It'll be more people who've seen the film. But in terms of the Frames, we've got a great audience in both Toronto and Montreal, and I really like them. It's something very, very. It's really nice to get out of America. Not that it's draining or that it's not a great country, but just it's just really nice to get into a place where, you know, where French is spoken, and just you can feel, you know, you feel a bit more European. I mean, New York feels very European to me, and I really always enjoy being there. But I also love being in Montreal.
Right. Right.
For the same reason.
Of the gigs that you've done so far on this tour, where would you say was the outstanding one so far that you felt that?
Well, so far the best gig we've had on this tour, I guess, would probably be Los Angeles, which is unusual for us again, because, you know, in terms of the Frames, Los Angeles was always one of those cities that we struggled with. But I guess because at the movie town, we went there, myself and Marquetta, and we played in a place called the Wiltern, which is like 3,000 people.
Right.
It's been sold out, you know, the longest, and the expectation was incredible. And, you know, so I guess Los Angeles has become a new central place for us, which is fantastic.
Good, good. Well, Glenn, I've taken enough of your time. And I'm not too sure if I can make it down to Toronto, to Montreal on the 22nd. It's on my schedule, and something as a try to do.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful I can. But I do appreciate you taking the time out of your hectic schedule and spending a few minutes with the listeners on the Gaelic Hour here in Ottawa.
Not at all. It's actually enjoyable to talk about something that isn't, you know, my favourite colour. It's nice to talk about Ireland.
By the way, do you still have the boa?
I do.
The one that you exchanged for your tie.
That's right, I do. I remember at the wedding, she gave me a boa and I gave her my tie.
Yeah, well, I understand your tie escaped Hurricane Katrina.
Really?
Yes.
That's so funny. We were just watching a show about... We were watching a show on the TV about the animals that were left behind during Katrina.
It was
fascinating and very sad.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But my tie survived, I'm happy.
It did, your tie survived. Glenn Hansard, thanks a million, and I hope that the rest of the tour is as successful as the past has been, and there are many more movies that you can maybe put music to, and aside from the music, that you can perform in, because your acting was something tremendous also.
Oh, thank you very much.
Listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. I will be back with you tomorrow night with the music-packed program. And that interview with Glenn Hansard was recorded earlier, late last year, November. So the date we were talking about a concert in Montreal and Toronto is not coming up. That was, as I said earlier, a few months back. And it was an honour to be able to interview Glenn Hansard before he received the Best Song at the Oscars. This program will be available on the internet later on in the week as a podcast. And you can send me an email. My email address is austin@thegaelichour.ca. The website is www.thegaelichour.ca. On the website, there are archives going back to 2005. In addition, we have a calendar of events, and we try and list some of the upcoming events that are there. And we put a playlist up there also, so that the music that we play here, you can see where we take it from. And if you want to go out and buy the CDs or anything like that, you can track it down.
Tomorrow night, as I say, I'll be back with you, a music program, and I'll fill you in greater detail on some of the events that are coming up for Irish Week. So until tomorrow night, this is Austin Cummerton wishing you all a wonderful, peaceful and sleepful evening. Slán go fóill.